gentlemen and other life forms assorted, welcome back. Rack Addicts After Hours, your favourite podcast, obviously. A weekly show around the music industry, science, technology. We're kind of nerds, it tends to work. Of course, in this pandemic-filled time, sufficiently distanced, few metres between Pete and I, just Pete and I today. And of course, car windows. We do a little remote recording thing. We're both in individual cars. Works out as a quite nice studio sound. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you. A little bit thin on the ground in the news this week, but we've got some other bits and pieces that we're gonna power through. But how have you been keeping, Pete?
I'm not too bad. I've been got rid of the accounts. Well, I say got rid of them. I finished the accounts, and they've
the
gone
hard
off to
slog.
Yeah, that's done. I'm really glad. It's one of those, as I said last week, it's just one of those sort of things you've got to do. You just got to gird your loins and get on with it and get it done. So that's done and out the way. Other than that, I've ordered a couple of flight cases for my Bose S1 Pros in the anticipation of things possibly opening up next year a bit.
Once we can, definitely more outdoor modcafs, though. That was a screaming success, the single one that we did.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. Both the S1 Pros have got is it up to 8 hours battery
it's,
life.
It's definitely a good chunk.
But my only fear was that I wouldn't say they're delicate, but it's not the sort of thing you want to haul all over the bash all over the place.
No, not too much.
And I was looking at they do a rucksack that they fit into, which is all very nice.
It's like £130 or something horrifying.
Yes,
isn't it?
I know. It's absolutely eye watering. So Swan Flight Cases in the UK, which is swanflightcase.com, I believe, were having. And I don't think it was particularly a Black Friday per se, because it was all the month of November and they were doing 30% off their flight cases.
Good deal.
So I bought two individual flight cases for the S1 Pros that came to £78 each. So
that's not too bad. Not too
Bose bad. Rucksack at £130 or a full flight case at £78. Seems like
I know which way I'd go.
Yes, much better value proposition. Plus the fact you know that they're going to be properly protected in something like that.
Definitely. It's something I think I do share something with Adam Savage. Of course I do. But he has a bit of a fascination with boxes, and he talks about this quite a bit because he likes making boxes for some of the objects that he's crafted or collected. I don't really know what it is either, but I really enjoy a flight case, quality flight case, nice butterfly latches, or something like a pelican case. Again, it's something super satisfying, utilitarian, protective. They're solidly made. They're just nice things, especially when it's a custom made for the exact instrument
the way they
or
sort
article.
Of snugly lower into, into the, the perfect accoutrement for some quality piece of equipment.
Definitely. And if you're lowering, especially with speakers, it's that kind of soft sort of
just slides in, that slight snug feeling. And I think there's going to be, looking at the design, there's enough space just to put the IEC lead.
Excellent.
Sort of down in the corner, so everything should be there. But if we do some of these more modular CAF things and the outside, as I say, the sort of battery side of things is what's really going to be the useful. So all I've got to do is pick up a set of speaker tripods, which I haven't in the moment. So I shall grab
that
some of
those. That should be easy enough.
Yeah, I'll grab some of those shortly, and then I shall have a nice little set. I was hoping to sort of either complement it with the...
You're going for one of those like leisure battery things, do you reckon, for powering the synths?
Yeah, exactly, because I've got to power the other stuff up. Yeah, so the leisure battery, I think we've mentioned that before as well. Mm. We did have a perusal, I remember some time ago on Amazon, and they had quite a selection of these things. They were relatively inexpensive for what they are. And that would be the full complement. So it's either maybe some little setup with the wave state plus the speakers as a little kind of performance thing, or the pedal board.
Maybe one then the other. I'm definitely interested in a wave state only set. You could get a lot of mileage out of that, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, yes. It's capable of so many things. You've got your four different... sort of what you would call it, channels or parts or layers or...
lanes, any lanes. Word you want.
Yeah, anything you want to say. So, yes, you can get quite a bit of variety, and there's quite a few things. And with the noodling capabilities that you've got, it's not as if you're just fixed with the one sound. You can really mangle things and really change things about. So you can take a preset and just take it for a walk.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to that. If/when it happens, I'm leaning towards a when, and it's going to be excellent. A little bit for a weekly update from me. Something that I never actually got a chance to discuss because I was hoping we'd have Luke with us either virtually or in person. But we went to see some live music. I did tease this before we actually went. And then we didn't have Luke with us. But we went to see Void Null, a live AV show. This was October sometime. Time flies, ages ago. But yeah, live music again after so long. It was good being in the audience. This was a seated, spaced out. You had to buy sort of an individual ticket or a two, a three or a four. But it was great. Really good to be able to support a venue. It's probably too little, too late, to be honest, in terms of any kind of rescue or anything. But it was good to get out again. Only disappointment was there wasn't masses of volume. And this particular show with Void Null, you want it to be raucous and rearranging the organs in some way. We didn't do too much of that, unfortunately.
So was it somewhat subdued or...?
Yeah, it was a little bit. I think I've spoken about them before, that they have a show which is themed around the heat death of the universe.
Yeah, it's a bit and mawkish.
It's bleak, but it's brilliant. And the kind of industrial, synthy, techno-y stuff that Ian goes for really works. Wasn't quite captured by this particular one. Luke really did enjoy the application of the pale blue dot speech throughout that show. Really did work with the visuals.
Was it a new set, or was it essentially the same performance, or a revised performance?
It was a new show, part of what they were doing for the Q121 show, which you know about this. This was that one in that abandoned wind tunnel.
One that unfortunately didn't happen. So many things.
So many things. So they're repurposing a little bit of that. So it's good that it got a little bit of an outing at some point.
So how was the distancing maintained? How was
like I said, it was seated, so they had staff ferrying us around in a controlled manner, seated the right distance away, masks on. There was no milling around at the bar. It was table service before we went into the main thing, and you could order drinks for the interval in advance. It was very well done. The problem is, small venue, such a limited capacity, there's no way that it could be, you know, viable for a venue to actually open like that regularly, even if restrictions are eased. Even a bigger venue with more space, no chance.
It's not really a practical proposition. On that note, Vice UK, the sort of documentary people, I want to say, was it news?
Both.
Yes. So on their YouTube channel, last week they released a video, and it was... basically a report on the German concert that we talked about it in the summer.
Yeah, we were discussing the rave suits, the COVID rave
suits.
Yeah,
it was the one in Germany. It was in Leipzig.
I can never remember the names.
And they were doing it as a university or a research group were doing it to look at potential of how we could move into a coronavirus safe future.
Yeah, for the live music world.
Yeah, for performance and live music. So it was a German pop star whose name escapes me. I wasn't familiar. I think he's only sort of relatively popular in Germany, possibly, or maybe other parts of Europe, but certainly not internationally. And it was at quite a big venue. But the reporter travelled from the UK, mostly by train, by the look of it.
Interesting.
And went through the whole process, and it was quite a day of it, and it was actually split into three parts. So it was quite a big stadium, and there was a fraction of the capacity that the stadium could hold.
Not exactly crammed like sardines anymore.
And in each part, they organised the audience in a different way. So they had one where they're all together, and then they had one where they were distanced in one fashion, and then another one where they were distanced in a different fashion. Everyone there had... participated in having coronavirus tests, so they were all theoretically not infected, and they all wore masks as well. So there was a lot of health and safety, so to speak, a lot of consideration about the, and it was very carefully considered. Unfortunately, their conclusions, they also had chemicals applied to them that fluoresced so that they could detect where people were touching and putting their hands and that type of thing. So they really went into it quite extensively. But it, and they also had a, I don't know if they were Bluetooth or some sort of other wireless kind of proximity sensors that they all had around their necks. And this would record how close you got to various people at any one particular time. So I assume similar to the way the track and trace apps work on your phone in some respects.
Well, it was German. I bet theirs worked.
Yes, quite possibly. So what they found was the biggest problem was in the intervals. That's when people tended to coalesce into groups when they should have been distancing. So
yeah, of course.
It went quite well during the performances. Obviously, it was somewhat difficult because of the sort of venue wasn't at capacity, and it was under strange circumstances. So, but ironically, when they had the distancing, it was when they got the best audience reaction. So maybe it's because it was that was the last one they did, and they'd kind of got used to the scenario and built up. But so the overarching conclusion was the big problem is during intermissions and in the sort of areas where that you can buy comestibles and food,
crowds
and drink,
at the bar.
And that type of thing. That was the big problem or problematic points in the concert. I'm not sure if they've completely published all their findings, and I'm just going on the basis of this particular Vice report that was on YouTube. But it's certainly worth a watch. So it's not mine this week's...
not your recommendation.
It's not my recommendation.
Not the official endorsement from Pete this week. No, it's interesting. I hope there is something that comes out of this, and even if it is super weird, super small, strange audiences or something, I really do miss it. Because I had a video shoot in London on Friday, which was in Westminster Chapel. We're shooting church band, basically doing just Christmas carols, standard kind of stuff, you know, drums, bass, keys, vocals, backing vocals, bit of brass in there, bass. So kind of normal stuff, but it was live music again. I mean, I was there as part of a camera crew, but it was really, really great to be around live music. I mean, I stopped doing live sound quite a long time ago because I couldn't really handle the stress of everything needing to be just right now, you know. I did find myself actually missing live sound work, so maybe I have been away from it for too long. No, it was good to be back in that environment briefly.
Yes. Well, I can imagine the... it's been a long time, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah. I mean, we've got friends and colleagues that are really like regular jobbing musicians, and I can't imagine what the kind of separation is like for obviously having to pursue, hopefully, temporary alternative careers to keep the money coming in. But they're going to be even hurting even more, well, separated from what they really love doing.
The arts in general have been decimated, haven't they?
Absolutely.
Really, cinema, theatre, live performance. Anything where there's sort of large social groups, it's just, all bets are off in that respect. I mean, the thing about the thing in Germany, the test, was that they were quite pessimistic at the time. This was before the sort of announcements about success with vaccines and so forth. So they were sort of viewing it on as a situation where coronavirus was endemic, and we had to continue like this indefinitely. And they were sort of looking at how can we bring these events back in a sort of post-COVID world.
Yeah, always difficult to see into the future in that way. But hopefully more tests, more experiments, we can have some resurgence for the arts industry. A little bit pessimistic there, but we do have some fun news to jump into in our next section. Small little nuggets today. You know we like Modal, and we've spoken about these before, but the Cobalt 8, it is official. 61 key and modules will be coming. To be honest, that module, that is quite tempting for me personally.
Just the desktop?
Yeah, just the desktop one. Because I don't really want to take up the space. I've got my key step. And I think it does sound the business. There is now a full review from Sonic State, which definitely recommend you check out. Yeah, that's on the radar.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
and I have a radar again. That's news in itself. I've escaped the retail world enough that I actually want to read up about synths. I'm so happy. It's great.
And I did think this was better than the Argon sounding. I've never been that excited about the Argon 8, to be really honest. I mean, I've played around with them.
Certain bits of it grabbed me for the Argon, but this one immediately was very interesting.
It does seem a lot more interesting.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it was relatively obvious that they've come out with these options as they've got them for the Argon as well. So it's not too much of a stretch. I mean, as we said, it's really the same control surface, different sort of algorithms under the hood. So it's essentially the same physical unit.
Yep, they've been proved to be reasonably reliable so far along their life.
Apart from the colour, and it's not too overly priced. What it is?
No, it's just a good solid option. That's something I definitely enjoy. Behringer Monopoly, so that's in the Poly D chassis, pretty much.
Yep.
Are you more hopeful about this one? Because I know you're really not a fan of the Poly D. You've had all of the bad experiences with it at work.
Yes. Maybe because this is, again, it's where the Poly D was something that they concocted. It's a bit of a Frankenstein. I know that the underlying principle were the sort of designs that they got making the Model D. But for me, the Poly D just didn't work properly, and it doesn't. I mean, I've had so many faulty ones to deal with.
So many. It's probably the worst of the Behringer items.
I know this sounds bad. I really wouldn't give it house room. I just have no interest whatsoever. I think it's a terrible thing.
Scathing words there, but yeah, hopeful for the Monopoly. Personally, that's a more interesting synth for me.
Yeah, because this is more of a reverse engineering. I know we're not supposed to call it a copy, but a tribute. But it depends how faithfully they've stuck to it.
How much digital stuff they try and wedge in.
What they've tried to add and so forth. I mean, a Poly D, what, set you back 1200 to 1500 from an original? And it's going to be, 40 years old or however old they were?
Oh, no, it'd be more for an original Model D.
No, I was talking about the Poly D. Not the Poly D. I was talking about the Monopoly.
Oh, right.
The
Monopoly.
Yes.
Yeah, probably around there, I think. There were a few, but wasn't there like three Korgs released around that kind of time? I can't remember any of the others around that same era of Korg synths. Do you know these off the top of your noggin? Because I'm not great
exactly
with vintage bits.
What I've found in a lot of cases, and it's the same a lot of products, life cycles were a lot longer back then. You know, if people made a synth, then they possibly sold it for maybe the best part of, I don't know, up to 10 years.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't catch the turnover for anything now. I mean, now we live in the sort of, with the expectation that every other year there's going to be an upgrade or a new product and something's going to be retired and something else is going to be brought back and so forth. Things just hung around a lot longer. So I certainly remember the sort of the MS range, but that's sort of late 70s.
It was the Poly 6. That was the one I was looking for.
So, but this, I'm not sure if this was kind of meant to be Juno-esque. It's not really, is it? Sort of, it's got sort of...
What, the Poly 6?
The Monopoly.
Oh, well, no, not really. I don't think. I mean, it was sort of, I think, released as kind of a cut-down Poly 6. Because this was, I think, released afterwards.
Well, the Poly 6 must be a Juno-esque type of their answer to the Juno.
Most likely. I mean, it's six voice, similar architecture, looks similar apart from the black and blue.
Yeah. So Behringer have sort of stuck to it relatively faithfully, other than the sort of amendments they've got to make just to sort of steer away from litigation from Korg.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of, Arturia have made a couple of statements about the Behringer Swing.
Yes.
There's been a little bit of discussion the airwaves.
I did notice that it wasn't just yourself that was a bit annoyed by it. There seems to be a whole...
It's quite a few articles, lots of people.
Yeah,
a lot of people have been quite...
And I took the chance or the opportunity to actually have a look, and you're absolutely right. It's almost identical.
Yeah, that's the reason it's it's annoying so many people because it's something that is currently available and they made no effort to improve on it. Because there was actually a good article that somebody wrote, can't remember the name, but they'd given a few ideas how they could have improved it. Maybe having a 16-step sequencer buttons across the top, joystick maybe. They could have had multiple parts in there. I mean, Behringer Digital stuff, it's probably not going to work anyway. But they could have tried, you know. And Behringer's answer was, yeah, it's just competition. We can make it cheaper. The consumer will decide, was their line, pretty much.
How cheaper, though?
I don't think we've got a price yet, but, I mean, it is Behringer.
It's going to have to be very cheap to make it sort of properly competitive. I mean,
I wonder if they'll hit the 50 quid mark.
It's got to be half the price to even come into running, surely.
99 is a great price. The Keysep's been 99 for quite a while. I've certainly enjoyed mine for the sort of 3 years I've had it. It's a staple.
Well, this is what everyone was saying. All the reports I read, everyone was saying it's the sort of certainly the modular sort of enthusiast's choice.
Yeah, because it's
just a very
so easy.
Popular piece of equipment.
Yep. We'll see what happens when it arrives at the shop and if it falls apart as soon as you look at it anyway. Telmo gave us some Black Friday deals, so hopefully some of our audience have profited from that one. Anything? Well, obviously you've got some flight cases, potentially Black Friday-ish. And have you scored anything on these the sales? I know I'm not a big plug-in man.
Well, let's be frank. As we know, Black Friday, certainly in the UK, I can't vouch for the US where it emanated from, but in the UK, it's generally an opportunity to get rid of slow-moving stock and things there's very few times that I've ever seen anything you actually really want that's in a Black Friday sale.
Yeah, I had my eye on some bike packing bags, and the website just gave out a code, 20% off everything, and I was going to buy them anyway, so why not?
Yeah, I mean, the whole, especially this year, this pandemic year, I mean, the whole premise, a lot of it was this kind of people queuing up half the night to rush in and sort of make fools of themselves, falling over the place, trying to grab the sort of lost leaders.
Fighting each other for a hairdryer.
I mean, that wasn't relevant at all, really. And most retailers seem to be sort of cranking up their Black Friday at least 1 or 2 weeks beforehand anyway. I think it's just an opportunity to start the sales. I mean, traditionally, years ago, the sales started in January. You had the January sales so that it would try and lift a bit of the retail situation after Christmas because it was tailing off. And then they sort of moved forward and started sort of mid-December to try and catch that.
Eventually, it's going to be, okay, that's it. August's done. September. Autumn sales and then winter
just,
sales.
Yeah, just starts November and December. And if you look carefully, a lot of the items you have been on that in the sale or at that sort of prices some other time in the year as well.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure there's retailers that are guilty of raising prices or the was price at least.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the small print where it said was at this price and then it gives you the parameters, it was at that price for a week sometime in the summer.
Yeah.
And I mean, quite frankly, the Amazon pricing is all over the place. I mean, I know Amazon is a big sort of proponent of the sort of Black Friday thing, but I mean, this will sound a bit spurious, but I bought a set of spice jars.
Okay.
I've been sort of considering it's been my Amazon shopping list for maybe a year or so. I'd seen them in a retailer and they were quite expensive and then they were sort of nearly half price on Amazon. But they're depending on what day you went. So day, I mean, these, I think they cost me something like £28. But the day before they were 36 and the day before that they were 38 and then the day before that they were 28. So this is weird and I've heard tell people mention this before with Amazon pricing that it actually changes on a daily basis and it's I don't know what there must be some sort of thinking behind it, whether it's just an algorithm or sort of the way they've programmed their systems, but I just found it very curious the fact that you've got these sort of undulating prices and there's no sort of tangible explanation. They were all allegedly discounted but different on each day. Every time I looked, it's a different price again.
Suspicious.
So I don't know if it's some sort of psychological thing for people with shopping lists and you sort of keep tracking it and then notice that the price has dropped and it makes you sort of, I don't know, panic buy or go, right.
Maybe, like you say, psychological something like the old $49.99. It's like, oh, it's under 50 quid by a penny. Yep.
Yes.
Classic moves.
So, but I haven't really, anyway, so, but, yeah, so nothing's really caught my eye in the respect of Black Friday, nothing that I couldn't get any other time at reduced cost anyway. And, yeah, there's nothing I've seen. And then all the sort of usual music retailers have been sort of sending out their bits and pieces and always have a look. And you just scroll through it all and it's all, yeah, you know. If there is something particular that you did want and it comes up, then all well and good. But I notice with a lot of them, it's their B stock. It's just an excuse to sort of either get the B stock or slow moving product lines and that type of thing. It's just to get the cash flow sort of turning over a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in that retail theme, I did complete 90% of my Christmas shopping about 5 minutes before I I came down here. Not all Amazon, some Amazon. That's something I've been agonising over for quite a few weeks now.
What to get and who for?
I knew the who for. I'm just occasionally I'll have the best idea, and it's just, you know, slam dunk. It's brilliant. That's the kind of Christmas present I like, really being able to get that perfect thing for somebody. It's a very consumerist holiday, isn't it? But I'm pleased with my ideas.
I just find that all so stressful. I'm lucky that I don't have to. I mean, we don't have a big family. I've just got my adult children, my father, and I just give the children money. To be honest, have some money. It's easy because, you know, how do you know what they want?
You've got to try and get them dropping hints from about the halfway point of the year to give yourself enough time to prepare.
I do, you know, if there's something particular and they have mentioned it or something like that and it's something I can facilitate relatively easy, that's not too much of a problem. Mm. But I'm certainly not going to try and second guess or sort of buy something for any of them on a whim or on a guess. I'd have to know 100% that's exactly what they wanted. And invariably, I mean, they've got to this age, the sort of thing they want is cars and houses. So that's not going to happen.
Inevitably, you hit that point where it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's time. Actually, I made a mistake last week. This wasn't coming to us from Stairwell Studios. In fact, this was Closet Studios. But once again, perhaps from Closet Studios, it is now time for Luke's Spacey Bit. Gets me every time, me hearing my voice saying the jingle when it's not coming out of my own face. But here we are. Thank you, Luke, for guiding us through some cosmological phenomena.
Hello, listeners. Good evening, good morning, or wherever/whenever you are. Welcome to the Spacey Bit. With what has likely been a busy and stressful week for some of us, I thought I'd do something a little different and offer you something a little more contemplative than what we usually do on the Spacey Bit, especially something that I think might be relaxing after a difficult day's work. We talk about space every week on this podcast, or more accurately, some of you listen to me talk about space at you. But I wondered, how well do you know your own home? By that I mean, how well do you know the solar system? In conversations about space, size really does matter, but it's very easy to become quickly and utterly lost when thinking about everything beyond Earth. Perspective is key. For that purpose, I wanted to direct your attention to the website onepixelmoon.com. That's the number one, pixelmoon.com. Put together by someone called Josh Worth, the website offers what it describes as a tediously accurate scale model of the solar system, which I think is just absolutely delightful. I won't spoil too much of it for you, as I thoroughly encourage you to head to onepixelmoon.com for yourself and spend a few minutes of your day appreciating this excellent piece of work. That said, I will walk through some of the mechanics briefly now. As per the name, the distance between every celestial body pictured on the site is rendered to scale as if the moon were the size of a single pixel. For this reason, the site is best viewed in full screen on something a bit larger than a handheld device, telephone, that sort of thing. Essentially, the site offers a side-scrolling view of the solar system, measuring the radii of the planetary orbits in sequence as they branch out from the Sun along the ecliptic plane. In this model, all of the planets are aligned along the same plane for the purpose of comparison. A meter measuring the intervals of hundreds of thousands of kilometers runs along the bottom of the page. The site has a charming style and even features an auto-scroll function which will move the model along the length of the meter at the speed of light relative to the resolution of your monitor, which is a brilliant feature, but it also serves as an utterly humbling experience and also gives the site its moniker of a tedious model of the solar system. If you explore it, you'll find out why. There are a few missing pieces, however, as comments on the homepage are quick to point out. The planets and planetoids shown in this model are not an exhaustive list of everything that you'll find in the real-life solar system, but I think visualizations like this are paramount to understanding the scale of our solar system and the great challenge that comes with exploring the space around us. And please write in and tell me if your experience is any different, but for most of my life, and certainly education, I found that I didn't have a particularly good grasp of just how vast the great spaces between the worlds really are. And yet, we're out there. Whether we're talking about our constant presence on the ISS, or the many missions that our robotic friends are undertaking on our behalf, humanity is reaching out and occupying the void. Next week on Rackalix After Hours, we'll be celebrating our 52nd weekly episode since the show was started. I've only been on board for a portion of that time, but it has been something that I've enjoyed immensely and hope to continue to participate in, especially seeing as the next 12 months on Earth promise some very, very exciting space news, from the return of Japan's asteroid sampling mission next week to the landing of Perseverance, the new rover from the Mars 2020 mission that will arrive on the surface of the Red Planet in February 2021. Well, that's it from me for now. Stay safe and well, and if you can, try and find some time to explore the wonders of our solar system. I find that it can put things in perspective. I'll be back next week with more space news, but in the meantime, I'll return you to our co-hosts. Bye-bye.
Tune in next week for, actually not quite the anniversary edition of Luke Spacey Bit, but certainly Luke Spacey Bit on the Rack Addict Anniversary Podcast. Thank you, Luke. But now, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendations. I've forgotten again. I do need to find that name. Anyway, on the internet, on your travels, your voyage of the digital world, Pete, what would you like people to check out to enrich their weekend?
This is one that's been in my bottomless YouTube list for a long, long time, and it's one for Luke as well.
Ooh, nice.
I'm sure he already looks at this one potentially anyway. And it's the SETI Institute. That is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And they have a YouTube channel, and that features a lot of their research. But it'll also go into, they'll sort of do critiques of Star Trek episodes and other bits of popular sort of science fiction, and sort of relate it to what they're doing and sort of the plausibility and so forth. But generally, it's quite an interesting channel. So SETI was formed in 1984, and it employs currently at the moment 130 scientists, educators and administrative staff working at the SETI Institute. And they operate things like the Allen Array. And also they were using the Arecibo satellite dish for some of their research, which Luke talked about, was it last week? Or was it the week before? I lose track of all these things.
Yeah, but time is pretty meaningless in 2020, let's be honest.
Yes. So unfortunately, I don't know if Luke mentioned it, they're actually decommissioning it now because the damage is so severe.
Oh yeah, that's a bit lame.
So I think it's been operating in excess of 50 years now, and but they've got some other options, and I think the Chinese possibly have got something on this sort of scale because it was the largest satellite dish of its type in the world, but I'm sure there'll be other pieces of equipment coming online or already available to switch over. Yeah, so it's quite an interesting thing if you're into that sort of thing. So the SETI Institute YouTube website.
Excellent. I've just got a quick one for those board game enthusiasts among you out there. This is Explaining a Board Game, a channel called Auntie Donna. Auntie is in auntie and uncle, Auntie Donna. If you've ever played anything sort of from Settlers of Catan upwards in terms of complexity, you will enjoy this video. Really good fun. Just a short one, just to round off your weekend. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week for the incredibly special thing that we haven't figured out what we're doing yet for the anniversary edition. That's right, Rack Addicts After Hours has been going for 51 episodes now, 52 episodes, a whole year. Throughout pandemic difficulties, we've lost people temporarily. We've reunited over the internet, through cars, in pubs, out of pubs, in fields, on fields. No, just in fields. But thank you very much. We appreciate your listening and your support. And we'll catch you next time on the anniversary. Farewell.